Okay, that's that wouldn't be my choice of ways of phrasing it, but I think it comes out okay. See, before we spoke of a person who does something and knows what he's doing, now we can speak of a person who does something and that's what he wants to do. Ordinarily, I would, and for ulterior motives, I would speak of him as having chosen it. Speak of a person choosing his behaviors as well as knowing what they are. The reason for putting it in the form of choosing rather than merely wanting is that it connects to other things like social practice descriptions, which and that connection will be important later. Colloquially, it's the case where you say that somebody did something on purpose. If I say that Tony sat down in that chair on purpose, I'm implying both that he knows that that's what he was doing and that he chose to do it. Now, the importance, this particular form of description has a very special importance. And that is that it represents our paradigm case for human beings, for people. We automatically take it for granted that a person's behavior is of this sort unless we specifically have reason to think otherwise. See, when you interact with other people in your daily lives, you take it for granted that they know what they're doing and that they've chosen to do what they did. Now, there are exceptions, but unless you know that it's an exception, you take it that it's this way. And if you have a person who doesn't operate this way, we lock him up. Either for his sake or for ours or both. Or we restrict his activities to correspond to how much of this he can do. But in order to be a normal adult, as we know normal adults, you have to behave this way. It's what it takes to be responsible for what you do, is to know it and to choose it. Now, that was a commentary. Some theorists would say, well, that's all right as a form of description, but it never occurs. People don't have any choice. They are not responsible for what they do. Well, remember, notation makes it just as easy to assert or to deny. Once you can say that somebody does that, you can just as easily say he doesn't do that. So again, by way of having access to all of the possibilities, you want a notation in the system that enables you either to assert or to deny it. You do not want a system that commits you in advance to only one or the other of these possibilities. We'll have more to say about deliberate actions later because, as I say, they have a special importance as paradigm cases of human behavior. Now, the third case of substitution is a substitution in the performance parameter.
Do you want to back up with
Yeah.
Understand the difference between intentional action and purposive action. Are you saying that if you didn't do it on purpose, it would still be an intentional action?
No. One of your burdens is that you have to separate the formal system from my commentaries. The word purposive is not a part of the system at all. It was by way of informal commentary that I say, when we say that somebody did something on purpose, we are taking it that he both knows and has chosen. Now, the reason that purpose is not, or purposive is not part of the system, is that whatever you can say using it, you can also say this other way. And I just didn't happen to pick that terminology. See, calling it an intentional action, I could have said purposive action. It wasn't accidental. A lot of terms have been used in so many ways that, in effect, they're spoiled. And purposive is one of those. There have been so many theories and so much written of various sorts about purposive and purpose, and also intention. See, there is not in the system the word intention. There is intentional action, but never intention. Because too much has been said by too many people in too many ways. You don't know what anybody is saying when he says intention or purpose. So I refer you back to non-technical context, everyday context, where you say he did it on purpose. And ask you, what are you saying there? And what you're saying is this kind of thing. You're implying something about these two parameters. So you might say deliberate action is a more systematic way of getting at the same kind of fact that you normally would be getting at by saying something is purposive, or that he did it on purpose.
Can you describe
this behavior?
You might not be able to fill in
the parameter,
like you might not know, and it
wouldn't
be deliberate action.
That's right. Mm-hmm. See, that's why it's important that as a parent, in case you take it that he does, even if you don't know. You have to have some reason to think he doesn't. Otherwise, even without having specific evidence for it, you think he does. But think how unlivable life would be if you had to establish separately for every piece of behavior on somebody else's part, if you had to establish that he knew what he was doing and that he had chosen. You simply couldn't live the kind of lives that we're familiar with. So that's not the way it works. It works on a baseline basis that you take it this is the case unless. You know, this one, substitution for the performance parameter, is our old friend significance again. This gives you a case where this behavior is engaged in by engaging in this behavior. You can take the examples that I gave of warning you by saying, notice the stripes. Say, warning you is this one. Saying, notice the stripes is this one. And I am accomplishing this behavior of warning you by engaging in the behavior of saying, notice the stripes. So we have two ways of dealing with significance. One is that it's one of the parameters of behavior. Two, it's one of the forms of description that's generated by this calculational system. In both cases, it's a case of doing X by doing Y. And if you had a case of doing X by doing Y by doing Z, you would have to expand this and substitute in the P there. As I said, this gives you the dimension of depth, of richness, of meaningfulness in human behavior.
X by doing Y, you are achieving Y by doing X. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Why wouldn't that be substituting behavior for achieving rather than performance?
It would be a different behavior.
Yeah, then you're substituting the whole thing into another behavior. The other X.
So if you're doing Y by doing X, you may be succeeding in doing Y, but that's Y. Your performance was doing X.
I see. Okay.
Besides, that's our next substitution for achievement. Any questions about the symbolic significance or symbolic behavior description? Let me say one additional thing about symbolic behavior. The formula doing X by doing Y will hold even for intentional action. See, if you specify the performance and you specify the intentional action, then you can say that that intentional action was performed by engaging in that performance. So you have a continuity from the bare intentional action, the performance. The action is the symbolic significance of the performance. Then other actions may be the symbolic significance of that action. So it's completely continuous. We'll come back to that form of description later also. Now the next substitution is under achievement. Recall I said the achievement parameter, there you specify the difference that the behavior makes. Specify what is different by virtue of the occurrence of that behavior. Now, one of the differences that a behavior can make is the occurrence of another behavior. See, for example, here's a standard example. If I'm walking down the hall and I see you coming the other way, I say hello, and then you say hello. Well, my behavior of saying hello, among other results, has had the result of your saying hello. So you would diagram it in this way, that the result of my behavior, the achievement, among other things, was the occurrence of your behavior of saying hello. Or if I throw the chalk at Tony and he ducks, his ducking is the result of my throwing. So one of the things I've accomplished by engaging in my behavior is the occurrence of his behavior. So when it comes to people influencing one another, when it comes to one person's behavior making a difference in some other person's behavior, you would use this form of description. And again, you can have a whole string of these. You can have behavior which has as its result a behavior which in turn has another behavior as its result, etc. So you can string this out as long as you want also. Now, more generally than just the case of one person's behavior influencing another, this form of description enables you to represent patterns of behavior particularly patterns in which there is more than one person involved, like the hello hello example. See, there's nothing in this formula that says the behavior, the person, is the same in each case. There's nothing in the formula that says he's different. So you can use this to represent patterns of behavior for a single person or patterns of behavior that involve more than one person. So in general, social behavior is going to require that kind of formulation, and that's why the name of this is a symbolic or a social practice description. Social practices are patterns of behavior. Okay, now those are the four main substitutions. Keep in mind that everything on the right-hand column, you could plug back over on the left column and perform operations on it all over again and generate new formulas. So, as I said, these products are merely the ones that you can get in one step with one operation. You could transform them all over the place by performing additional operations. You know, deletion involves being noncommittal. It involves implying nothing about one or more parameters of behavior. Our first deletion, I think, is the W. Now, deletion operations enable us to talk only about some aspects of things rather than about all aspects. And sometimes that's what we want. For example, in talking about a table, we might not be interested in the specific gravity, but only the size of the top. You don't always want to talk about all aspects of a thing. So, suppose you have a behavior, but you don't want to talk about the motivation. You only want to talk about the rest of it. Well, then, via a deletion operation, you have a form of description that enables you to be noncommittal about the motivational parameter. Now, why would we want to do this kind of thing? Again, there are two main reasons. One, very often, you don't know. For example, if I look out the door and I see somebody walking down the hall, I'd usually be willing to make some commitment to various aspects or various parameters of his behavior. The one that I would be least willing to is the W. Why? Because a person could have all kinds of motivations for walking down that hall. Walking down that hall could be part of any number of different behaviors, and I'm not in a position to say which. On the other hand, it's not as though I couldn't say anything about his behavior. After all, I'm sitting there watching. So if I want to say as much as I know, if I want to be committed to as much as I am in a position to, and not to something else, I can give this kind of description. I can tell you as much as I know and say nothing about what I don't know. Now, normally, doing that requires some awkward phrasing. Normally, I would say, he's walking down the hall, but I don't know why. See, in saying, but I don't know why, is in effect a verbal deletion operation.
It seems that normally, you see someone walking down the hall, who leaves the troops and the motivation of getting down. No, if you take the paradigm case, you behave to deliberate action. Then normally you would be saying something like that.
You might.
But you might not be saying where it's going.
Mm-hmm. You're saying, well, I probably would, in a pinch, be willing to commit myself to this. It's more this that I would.
I was just making a distinction between not saying anything about the W and not going beyond what's
on. Right. Well, as I say, if you are willing to, and you might, if you're just standing there, then you wouldn't give this kind of description. Now, the other general case where we want this form of description is where we're dealing with a regularity which doesn't involve this. And the major examples of those are social practices. So if you say, what form of behavior is it to play chess? What form of behavior is it to play tennis? What form of behavior is it to read a book? You can specify what form of behavior, except that the W parameter is irrelevant. You don't have to have any particular motivation in order to be reading a book. You don't have to have any particular motivation in order to be playing chess or playing tennis or driving a car. To be doing those things only requires restrictions on the other parameters. It does not require any particular motivation.
If somebody's playing tennis, aren't you assuming they want to be playing tennis?
No. You may, but you don't have to. See, and that wasn't the problem that I was addressing myself to. The problem was, what is it to play tennis? What is it that one has to do to qualify as playing tennis? And I mean, it's quite true that everybody who does has some motivation, has some reason. But that's not what it takes for him to be playing tennis. All he's got to do is make the right moves and follow the rules. And if he does that, he's playing tennis no matter why he's doing it. So as a regularity, as a form of behavior, it doesn't depend on motivation. And therefore, in order to specify that form of behavior, you would need a notation that doesn't commit you to anything motivational. No. See, after all, if you were a sociologist, you would almost never want to be dealing with motivation. You would want to be dealing with simply patterns of behavior, things that people do without reference to why any particular individual does any of those things.
I understand. Someone's playing tennis and they ask, what's he doing? You say, he's playing tennis. Without answering the question, he calls.
Right. So you're not asking or answering the question, what's he getting out of it? Why is he doing it? Even though there is something he's getting out of it, and there is some reason why he's done it.
Mm-hmm. If that's the case, would the S parameter always disappear when the W ones disappear? Could you sort of give an example where it wouldn't?
Well, it's not a matter of it disappearing. That's why I say that.
Well, not being deleted.
Yeah. You see, this is an observer's move. That he doesn't want to commit himself to this. But take the case where you see me and I'm holding a tennis racket and I'm hitting the ball. Now you can give a perfectly good description here of my performance, etc. Leaving out the motivation, you say, I don't know why he's hitting the ball there. And then, but you could say, but no matter what that motivation is, the significance of his doing that is that he's playing tennis.
The description of the whole behavior was that he's playing tennis.
Well, think of when you say a person is playing tennis. A person playing tennis is doing something at any given time. You know, he's serving the ball, he's chasing it, he's running, he's waving his racket. All of those are part of playing tennis. So each one of those is a separate behavior, but it is also a way of playing tennis. So you can say he's playing tennis by serving the ball, by running, by hitting. And so tennis would be the significance. So it's not what you would call an intuitive example, and nor is it common to do it, but you can do it. So keep in mind, patterns of social behavior require some kind of deletion because as patterns, they don't depend on individual motivation. So if you're thinking in terms of regularities, if you want to map regularities, you want to represent what that pattern is, you will need deleted forms of description. So deletion operations enable us to talk about some aspects of people and their behavior and leave out reference to other aspects. Now, one reason for describing these as forms of description rather than different kinds of behavior is this business here, that when we give an activity description, it's not that we're saying there's something like behavior except that there's no motivation. We take it that the motivation is there, but we're not talking about it. And so it's only a form of description, not a phenomenon. See, with the substitution operations, these correspond to phenomena. There are things that you would call cognizant action, deliberate action, social action, etc. But when you have the deletion operations, those don't correspond to phenomena. They are incomplete descriptions. And that's why the emphasis on these products is that they are forms of description, and some of them correspond to phenomena, others do not. The ones that do not because they are incomplete. And incomplete in principle, not incomplete in the sense that even if you specify K, you never know if you've got it all.
Is that what you value on the operation? One operation is a better operation than another because of the
As I say, if you want to talk about patterns and they don't depend on motivation, you'd be in a hell of a fix if you had to talk about motivation. So you need to be able to pick and choose what you talk about, and deletion operations enable you to do it. Again, remember, access to all possible facts. So this enables you to pick and choose what it is you're going to talk about without having to invent hypothetical phenomena that correspond to every way you have of talking. Okay, now this one is an activity description, and it involves one deletion, namely the W.
In your appendix, you have not only W deleted, but also...
Oh, okay, let me introduce something here. We use two forms of notation here, and so far you've only encountered this one. Here's the other one. It's a notation that involves only five of these eight parameters. Because very often, you're not at all interested in any of these, you're only interested in these five. And rather than routinely going around deleting three of them, if you use this notation, by convention, you are never talking about I or ID or S. Now, it's in reference to this notation that I say there is one parameter deleted. Now, in terms of this notation, a substitution in the K parameter would be done this way. As the diamond is the notation for intentional action, you want to specify that one intentional action is being distinguished from another. You simply put the two diamonds here in the K parameter to indicate that this one is being distinguished from some number of others. For a substitution for W, you would put it here to indicate that one intentional action is wanted or chosen in contrast to others, other alternatives which were not chosen. For a social practice substitution, you substitute here and you wind up with a chain of diamonds. And finally, for a substitution in the performance parameter, you wind up with a diagram that looks this way. It is that this action is the performance parameter of this action. It turns out that the diamond notation is quite handy in many ways in which the other is sort of non-heuristic. Why? Because you can visualize in these terms a lot better. There's a lot of things you can visualize a lot better here than here. This is the symbolic behavior description. That this IA here, let's see. Here's a case of doing X by doing Y. Doing Y is the value of the performance parameter of X. So in substitution, you simply plug the diamond in wherever you're going to substitute. Okay, well, as I said, it's in reference to this notation then, that the activity description involves deleting one parameter.
Do you have a name for that particular
kind of notation? Yeah, which? You mean the notation?
The diamond notation.
Diamond notation is about the only term that we've ever used. There's no name for this notation. This is the set theoretical notation. Okay, so that was our first deletion. Now the next one is what, a performance description? Yeah. Performance description, you delete all three. These, and you're left with performance and achievement. Just to backtrack a little on the activity description, that again has a particular technical application. Think of a situation in which somebody either on one occasion or characteristically does something and doesn't know it and has reasons for not knowing it. Which is to say, it's the kind of case that you would classically describe as he's got unconscious motivation at work there, and therefore would resist knowing it. It's not accidental that he doesn't know what he's doing. Now, suppose you want to get him to see that that's what he's doing. If you use intentional action descriptions and deliberate action descriptions, which would imply that he's doing it on purpose, you run into that resistance. In effect, you're asking him to admit that he's doing it for that reason. And he'll resist, and he'll have a hard time then seeing that that's what he's doing. If instead you use activity descriptions that don't imply the motivation, don't imply that he's doing it on purpose, then he has a much easier time seeing himself as doing that. Why? Because he doesn't have to admit that he's doing it on purpose. And this can serve as a very useful intermediary step to get him to see at a later time that he was doing it on purpose. Or more sneakily, you can operate without ever getting him to see that he did it on purpose. Because if you get him to see even this much, it's going to be hard for him to do it next time and say, but I didn't know it, or but I didn't mean it. Once he can see that under some description he is doing that, and you've reminded him that that's what people have to go by, and if they see what you see, they're going to treat it that way, they'll have a hard time later just saying innocently, but I didn't really mean it that way. So it's a way of getting him to stop doing it, whether or not you ever get him to see that that's what he was doing. And the technique there of using activity descriptions as the form of psychological interpretation depends precisely on the deletion of the W and the fact that it's the W parameters that people are most involved with when they don't know what they're doing.
That in contrast to a pure performance description, the ones you use achievement parameter, you are assuming that there has to be some motivation there. That's not quite clear.
Now take the case. Look, suppose that at the end of the class, I take you aside and say, hey, you know, you were being pretty sarcastic. And you say, oh, me? I didn't mean that. I wasn't being sarcastic. And then I say, but man, look what you said. Look when you said it. Look at the circumstances. And unless I'm making it up, you wind up saying, well, yeah, I can see where it could look that way to you, but I didn't really mean it that way. Well, that's the kind of thing I have in mind, where it's easy for you to see these aspects of it and still say, but I didn't mean it that way. And what you're claiming, in effect, that that's just a description that applies to your behavior as an activity description, but it does not apply as an intentional action description, that there is something else that you were doing and knew about and did on purpose, and it just happens also to fit that description. And that's why you say, I didn't mean it that way. Here's what I was really doing. But, as I say, once I get you to see this, it's going to be hard for you to do the same thing next time and just say, I didn't mean it, because I've shown you how it comes across, and you've seen how it can come across that way. Well, see, these things have a lot of these incidental little applications. It's not as though this was designed for therapy.
Yeah.
But once you have the distinctions and see how it works, you can pick off a lot of things like that and apply them fairly directly. Okay, now the next one is, I guess I had it drawn here. Is a performance description.
Are you aware in that appendix two, there's two things called performance description?
Okay, line 8 should be performative, not performance. Yeah, in appendix 2, line 8. I recall what I said about the performance parameter. Let's take this one in terms of movement and take the same example. Suppose I walk out toward the door, except that I stumble here and fall on my face. They said, well, it's really a case of stumbling. Then the movements involved in tripping and falling are not an expression of my competence, and therefore, when you say he stumbled, you're not describing my behavior, you're describing something that happened to me. Now, suppose I'm somebody special, like a circus clown, who can do that sort of thing on purpose. And suppose you see me stumble, and you don't know which it is. You don't know whether I did it on purpose to give you a laugh, or whether I just happened to trip, or what. Well, if you give this kind of description, you see, you're not committed to whether it's an expression of my competence, but neither are you denying it. You're being noncommittal. And so if you say he tripped, but give it as a performance description, then you are telling as much as you are in a position to say. And you are leaving open the very kind of thing that you want to leave open because you don't know. Take some less esoteric examples, like my blinking my eye versus my eye blinking. See, I can blink my eye on purpose, but also if something hits me or if I see a rapid motion close up, my eye will blink without my doing it on purpose. Well, again, the performance description will not distinguish cases of doing it on purpose and cases of not doing it. Cases of reflex or automatic behavior or non-behavior like the tripping. So under this form of description, then, you are non-committal, in effect, as to whether it's behavior at all, or just movement, or just reflex, or just something else. And sometimes you want to be that non-committal. Or again, imagine that you're a baseball coach, and you're doing some batting practice. And here's a batter, and you tell him, look, you're holding your elbow too high. Bring it down 2 inches. Now, there, you're really only interested in the kind of thing you can see. You want that elbow down two inches. And you're not particularly interested in any of this. You're not trying to motivate him to do it. You don't care about what kind of competence is involved. You don't care about what distinctions he's making as he stands there batting. You simply want that elbow down 2 inches. So that's the kind of instruction you give. You're in effect saying, change your performance in this way. So in both technical, psychological, and other sorts of contexts, sometimes you want to just deal with performance. Performance and the difference it makes. The next form is where you delete everything but the achievement. Where all you're talking about is the results, what he accomplished. See, reporting a test score is of that sort. You say somebody got an IQ of 120. You say somebody gave me this protocol in the Rorschach. You're not implying anything about these. You're simply talking about what he accomplished. And again, the accomplishment, he may have done it on purpose. It may have been something he wanted, or it may not. And it doesn't matter as far as being an accomplishment goes. Because not all the results of your behavior are results that you can anticipate or know about or want. So in some of the cases that we're talking about earlier, where the answer was, I didn't mean it that way, or that's not what I was really doing. At this point, we can say, under an achievement description, you're darn right that's what you were doing. And what you're denying is that under an intentional action description, that's what you were doing. So again, you see, particularly in these cases, the description applies, but there is no phenomena corresponding to it. You see, what was really going on was that he was, what? Just participating in a normal classroom discussion. Under this kind of description, we can say he was being sarcastic. But he might convince us that under no further description was he being sarcastic. Then we can say, well, at least under this form of description, he was being sarcastic. But under this form, he wasn't. In this respect, the description applies. In these respects, it doesn't. He didn't have the motivation. He wasn't looking for opportunities. He wasn't drawing on the kind of competence that he would have to be sarcastic. But if you just look at what he said, or if you just look at what he succeeded in doing, then you say, yeah.
A little bit of an aside, but I have to ask it. Back to therapy. One approach might be to begin with the A and then begin knocking all the other defining counter no action.
You don't usually get a chance to be that systematic. No, clients will not sit still that long. Yeah. See, if you have a well thought out action that you want to get him to see he's doing, you could systematically get him to see these and then finally present him with a whole package. I really can't think of any time I've had occasion to do that, but clearly it's possible.
I think the framework could be there.
Yeah.
As a movement.
Right. What is more closer to the mark is using this diagnostically and saying, he's doing this, how much of it does he know and how much of it doesn't? And then using that to say, well, he knows this much, but it'll be 6 weeks before he'll see this. Yeah. Something like that. Okay, now the last deletion is the performative. Performative is the mirror image of the achievement description. Namely, it's the achievement that's deleted. Everything else is in. Two things involved here. One, the term performative comes from the tradition that I mentioned. Remember when I gave you the example of saying $30 or 30 days? This is an example of a non-statement making use of language. In the philosophical literature, that is a performative. Saying $30 or 30 days is a performative use of language. Now that kind of use of language directly corresponds to this, and that's why I picked that term. Because it does connect that way. You think in terms of what's this used for, the answer is the difference between trying and succeeding. Suppose I throw this piece of chalk, and let's make it Jane. I throw it at Jane, but it misses. Now, would you say that I had thrown it at Jane? Well, you could quibble with that because you say, well, after all, since it didn't hit her, how can you say you threw it at her? Well, you say, under a performative description, that's what I did. As far as the success goes, you're being noncommittal. You can say, at least that's what he was trying to do. Well, here again, think of how much of human behavior involves trying but not succeeding. Think of how much of what you do, you don't have that guarantee in advance that you're going to succeed, but you certainly have enough basis for thinking about it and trying. Okay, so this form of description enables us to talk about everything except the achievement.
I don't see quite how it connects with the classical usage of the word performative in philosophical context.
Well, remember I said, I now pronounce you man and wife, or no, $30 or 30 days, either one. both of those are classic examples in the literature of performatives. One is, I now pronounce you man and wife in the right circumstance. The other is $30 or 30 days. And I said that both of them could go wrong, but not by being false. So if I get into the taxi and say either I now pronounce you man and wife or $30 or 30 days, something has gone wrong. And what has gone wrong is I haven't succeeded in performing a marriage and I haven't succeeded in passing a sentence. So the achievement of that performative is missing. Now the notion of the performative. Yeah, the performative can fail. And so the notion of a performative is noncommittal with respect to the achievement. Because the performative is the form of doing, and the question of whether it succeeds on a particular occasion or not is left to some other set of considerations. What marks it as a performative is it's the kind of thing which in the right circumstance succeeds. But it would, you know, doesn't mean that every time it succeeds. So it has the right features to qualify as performative in the sense of the existing literature.
An interesting subtle difference if the judge says $30 for 30 days and in the courtroom succeeds in passing the sentence, but the defendant says, I'll take the $30.
Yeah.
Part of the judge would occur in the part after that.
Yeah. You're following the same line of thinking as is in the literature, because that's the difference between illocutionary force and perlocutionary force. That is whether it succeeds that way. So that's a different tradition. It just happens to coincide here, but some of their further developments are not anything that corresponds to any of this. And that particular one is not something that corresponds. Which? Oh, illocutionary and perlocutionary. I-L-L-O. Okay, let's do one more before we quit for the day. And that's deletion, or that's identity, because that's real simple. The result of the identity operation is just to leave the thing unchanged. You know, and that's like adding zero or multiplying by one. Now, in mathematical systems, having operations like that is crucial. Here, it's more a matter of convenience. The convenience is this. That we want to be able to make certain simple statements rather than complex ones. The simple statement in question is that in this system, it is the products which are forms of description. Now, intentional action is certainly, you could give that kind of description of an individual behaving. So it is already known to be a form of description. And if you didn't have an identity operation, if you left it only as an element, then you would have a more complicated statement. You would say either the element or the products are forms of description. So just for technical convenience to have certain kinds of simplicity in there, you have an identity operation that makes the element into a product that's identical. Then you can deal purely with the products and not have to involve elements. That's all there is to that one. Now, next time, let's continue with the reduction operations that give you causal descriptions. And then I think we go back to person. Okay.